Welcome to Soul Sisteries. Welcome to Soul Sisteries. We are so excited to have you listen to our friend Leah, who is just so filled with hope and love and light and beauty. And for myself, having gotten to spend this time with her, I just feel lighter and more hopeful.
For sure. Oh my gosh. I was so thrilled to talk with Leah because here she shared everything that we're hoping to be about in this podcast, right? And so all that messaging is there. And also, like, I want to say here, it can be very easy to see this stuff as sort of a Pollyanna, oh, just be hopeful and just feel the hope. And it's not that at all. And she shares that so gorgeously that this is, there are choices to be made here, right? And consciousness around perspectives and how we embrace life. And it doesn't negate the hard stuff and the very heavy stuff or even the feelings around that, but how one can lead this hope-filled and joy-filled life throughout all of it. It's, oh man, that is some magic stuff right there.
Yeah. And the idea that hope is available to all of us, right? It's not this thing that only some people get or only some people deserve. It's, you know, it can be a conscious decision to be hopeful. Yeah.
Yeah. And there are concrete things that one can do in order to generate that emotional experience and certainly that intellectual one. So this is good stuff. I can't wait for everybody to hear what Leah has to share. Oh my goodness. Man, we are on to something.
Her story.
All right, here we go, everyone.
Okay, well, so here we are at Soul Sisteries. Today, we are talking with my good friend, Leah. Leah and I go way back, working as social workers and forensic interviewers in the 90s. I was able to watch Leah become an amazing mom to her precious girl. Later, she left social work and returned to her hometown, where she started her own creative business, refinishing furniture. So many beautiful projects she created. And then she became a realtor, which she is still doing now. She gets so much joy helping others create the home life that they've dreamed about. She heroically battled and beat breast cancer. A journey through which she taught so many of us about perseverance and never giving up hope. Despite her life experiences with multiple losses and loved ones' struggles with mental illness, she has been a beacon of hope for me, a true inspiration. And I'm so excited to welcome Leah to Soul Sisteries and to share her story with everybody. Leah, of course, we ask how she experiences hope through. And Leah mentioned that she experiences hope through knowing that behind the clouds, the sky is always blue, which is absolutely beautiful. So welcome, Leah, to our Soul Sisteries podcast. We're very excited to have you here.
Hi, welcome. Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Yay. So really what we said is that if this is just a few of us sitting around chatting, we do have, you know, questions for you. We really want to just kind of hear from you. The podcast itself is about hope and how people have found hope, created hope, what gives them hope, really kind of with this idea that we just want everybody to know that hope is not this elusive thing, that we can all access hope. And as I mentioned, your story has always been so hopeful for me, and you have been very inspiring for me. So I want to just kind of throw it to you first for you to share kind of, I guess, what got you here. Like, I'm trying to think back to the 90s, and when I think of Leah in the 90s, was she full of hope? Did we talk about hope? I don't know that that was part of our discussion back then. And so I guess I just want you to share what has got you to this state of being hopeful.
Yeah, that is interesting. I don't think back then that I really gave hope a lot of thought. I don't recall us having spoken about it. I mean, obviously we were younger and just sort of going about our lives living. But I feel that probably for me and for you, because I think we kind of express ourselves similarly. And I think that hope was probably like part of us, but we just didn't acknowledge it. Maybe we didn't have like enough bad experiences to make us need it, you know?
Isn't that a true thing also, that we find these wells by our choices in adversity, in the challenges, their choices we make, and then the hope sort of comes through that, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, definitely. I will say too that I think I am by nature an optimistic person. And hope and optimism, that I don't think they have to go in hand in hand, but for me, they definitely do. Because even in the darkest of times, for the most part, I've been able to remain hopeful and optimistic that things can improve.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm trying to think back to early years, and I remember you had your baby before I had mine. And I remember you getting pregnant and just the excitement and the hope and the, like, we were young. I mean, we were adults, but we were young adults. And I remember just thinking, my God, she's got it all together. Like, she's ready to just tackle this parenting thing. And right now, as a parent myself, I'm like, okay, there were probably a lot of challenges, but you did it so easily and just like, just really hopefully, like knowing that you had this child's future in your hands.
Oof, that's daunting.
Well, yeah, I don't know that that is how I felt, but I was very happy to be pregnant. And I was like, okay, well, it's twofold. I remember so specifically, and this is hilarious to me, about probably like 8 months or something, like getting close to childbearing time, and thinking and just being so completely disgusted by the idea that I was going to have this little baby and it was going to be with me every minute of every day. And I was like, oh, how am I going to deal with this? Which is so not the way that I feel, like, and not even probably how I felt then. I'm sure it was hormonal, but I remember distinctly just being like, oh, what have I done?
And you know what? I think so many, you know, soon to be new parents and new parents have those feelings, and we don't talk about it. Like, I remember when my eldest was born and like first looking at him going, who the hell are you? I'm like, oh my God, what is
it's
happening?
It's so funny. It's such a weird thing, being a parent, like a beautiful thing. I wouldn't change it for anything at all. But those feelings quickly dissipated when they held her up, because I ended up having to have a C-section because just stubborn little thing, and she was upside down and late. And they held her up to me, I remember, and I just remember the feeling, and I said, oh, I love her so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they brought her to me to kiss, what they took her to, like, clean her up and like sew me up and everything. And I remember going to kiss her, but I didn't want to touch her because she was so perfect and I didn't want to give her a germ.
It's so true. I'm going to tag on there real quick. Same. That first thought was like, who are you? And then I held him and he moved his hip in the way that was exactly that motion I recalled from in my womb. And there was the overwhelming, oh my God, it's you. It's you. And and then that rush of love came. So it was that double whammy. I love that you just shared your story, because
amazing. And I did love, like, I remember Diana, like, talking to you and being like, oh, I get to go get Sophie now, like, go and pick her up. I was always just so enthusiastic to see her and be around her little cute self.
Mm. Yeah. Oh my gosh. It seems like just yesterday that she was born. And I think when we were talking last week, I think you said is she 25?
25.
Oh, and she was just born. I still remember that. So yeah.
Oh my goodness. Well, Leah, thank you for taking the time to be here with us and to share your story and your journey. I know that hope is not just this magic wand and I am hopeful and here we go. And, you know, and it certainly doesn't discount any real lived experience and real feelings along the journey. And God, we would never want to suggest that it should. Well, just be hopeful, everyone, and everything will be okay. That's not it. But what is it, though, in the world? Like, clearly, you said you were optimist naturally. You had certain inclinations. I know you have clinical training, so there's things that you know through your studies. But what is it consciously in the world around you that does give you hope and inspire you to hold on and to think a new thought or think differently, feel differently?
Huh.
I said a lot.
Yeah. Let me break it.
Synthesize that and break it. Yeah. Thank you.
I think that for me, being hopeful is a choice. Mm-hmm. So if I'm feeling hopeless, which has happened and could probably happen again in the future, is that I've had to make a conscious choice. And I have a really good example of when I worked here back in Austin at the DA's office, and I had I worked with the victims of violent crimes, like murders, rapes, you name it, like just horrible stuff.
That's intense.
It was, yes, it was. And I had one mom who had a daughter. She was disabled, and the mom's sister and the sister's boyfriend went to the house and beat her to death. The attorneys on the case decided not to take it to trial, that they were going to just plead it out, like work out a plea bargain with the sister. And the mom was understandably upset. Mm. And I remember when they were talking to us and she was holding my hand like so tight, like just squeezing the life out of my hand. And it was awful. And I felt really hopeless. I felt very disappointed in our office for not pushing forward with that. I felt the heartbreak of her that my sister did this and basically she's getting off scot-free. Really a very dark moment. So I was like, all right, they left. I got to get out of here for a little while. So I walked out, and because I was just going to drive around, you know, like listen to some music or just, I don't even know what my plan was, but I was out of the DA's office for like an hour or so. And I walked outside, and it's not like a very beautiful environment. It's downtown, like not a lot of trees or anything, but I took a deep breath and then I heard birds singing. And I was like, even now the birds continue to sing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, things will go on. Like there will be beauty in her life again, in the mom's life. And I know that there is. I'm not in a lot of contact with her, but I reach out to her every just few years. I think it's probably a little hard for her to talk to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to make her life harder, but I know that she obviously will never get over that loss, but she's gotten married. Like she has a life of her own that's continued. And I have a million stories like that, but that one in particular, like I made a choice, like I've got to get out of this oppressive environment of despair that I'm in at this moment and walk out. And it, however I managed to still be aware that there was beauty going on despite the ugliness.
It's not an either or, it's a both.
Right.
And there's the mm-hmm. duality that we sometimes really struggle with accepting and existing, that these both yes. of these things are true. This nightmare, horrific loss, real, horrible, the injustice, that is true. And also the birds singing and other possibilities of love and union and joy, all of that can exist in the same space.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean, great story. It's
right.
Heartbreaking and also so hopeful. And so, and that's just, that's humanity there, right? That's the heart of it. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you.
And that experience reminds me a lot of the work that we did when we were working together, you know, working in the field of child abuse, and people, my family included, thought I was crazy. And why would I do that kind of work? And I think back to that. And even if we didn't talk about hope back then, Leah, I think we did it because we were hopeful, because we were hopeful we could make a difference in these kids' lives, right?
Yeah.
Yes. And maybe even prevent it from happening to somebody else, you know, through that. And offering an ear to hear their story without judgment or expectation or relationship, because, you know, it's got to be kind of hard to talk about that stuff with your family when you're young. You barely even have the words to express, like how they touched you, or, you know,
you're
just right. The sort of malignancy of all of that. But yeah, I do think that we were hopeful then. And I remember then too, feeling sometimes like, God dang, this world is hard. Mm-hmm. Some of those stories, I mean, they're heartbreaking.
Yeah. Yeah. And pushing through it though, because we knew there was something on the other side, and kind of like, you know, your hope through knowing that behind the clouds, the sky is still blue, you know, that beauty still exists, I think is really important. So,
and we had a good group of people, because we, like, I remember, you know, we would cry, but then we would laugh, and, you know, we had maybe a bit of dark humor. And
Has to be something in that too, right? That you weren't in it alone, that was this community who understood. And of course, that's just something that we all need, right? Those people to talk, somebody who understands this space that we're in, this place that, and to be able to talk with them and share. Yeah. And boy, and humor goes a long way. Let's not discount dark humor, man. That is life-saving at times.
For real.
Yeah.
So crazy work, right? I mean, you've had some heavy work experience. Maybe real estate, I'm hoping, is a little lighter than that kind of work was. But who knows? There's still things that happen. And I know you have the ups and downs with clients. I mentioned earlier, Leah, your battle with breast cancer. And that is something that, you know, you were in a different state. We connected over Facebook, and I watched your journey. And it's crazy to say this, but it was a very beautiful journey, a very graceful journey.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
And it was so positive and hope-filled, of course, and you beat its ass. I mean, you really did. And I'm curious, like, how you got the strength, how you got the confidence to battle the way you did with grace and hope the whole time.
I mean, it was so weird. I remember it so clearly, obviously, like the doctor called me, like I had found a lump, and I was like, it was just, I had to keep reminding myself. I found it on a Friday or maybe a Saturday. And I was like, I have to remember this and call the doctor next week. And I wasn't afraid. I was just like, I have to remember this. Like, it kept coming to my mind. I'm like, I have to remember. So I went, did all the different stuff. They ended up doing a biopsy. They're like, we'll call you on Friday. So I asked the doctor then, I'm like, look, I mean, if you think it's cancer, just tell me. And she's like, I don't know. She said, part of it looks like it, part of it doesn't. And I'm like, all right, whatever. So Friday I was waiting for the call. I got the call. She was like, it is a type of breast cancer. So blah, 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 whatever she said. And I remember just saying, okay. Like, that's all I was saying. And then I got off the phone, and my husband was there, and we had just recently separated. And poor guy, you know, I'm just like saying, okay. And he's just like staring at me with his eyes bolting out of his head. So finally I gave him a thumbs down. And I remember he came over to hug me, and I was like, no, I'm okay. And that's a whole different story. But I remember like, no, I'm good. And I immediately thought, I am not leaving my daughter. I will live through this. And that was that. Like, it was a decision. Now, I mean, maybe I would have lived without it. It was a pretty aggressive little bugger, I will say. Really growing very, very quickly. And I'm super thankful that I found it when I did. Otherwise, we might not be having this conversation, but it was literally a instantaneous, wholehearted decision that I'm going to go forward, I'm going to live, and I'm going to make it as easy on her as possible. Because she was in eighth grade, and like, what a crappy time to have your mom sick, you know? Like, eighth grade is hard enough without worrying about your mom dying.
Right, right. Goodness. And so you made that decision. And then, like, I feel like I have hope in my life, even when things get bad. I still have this piece of hope, but I could let myself go down kind of that dark hole and throw me a pity party and let me wallow for a little bit before I bounce back out. I don't know that if anybody didn't know you, if they saw anything, and of course we know like social media only shares what we want to share. Everything was so positive. Everything that you shared gave us hope. Like, so I don't know if it was you feeling like, okay, well, I have to just show the world that this is what's going on and I'm only going to show them the good side, but it gave us hope. Like no matter what was going on in my life while you were battling, I was hopeful because I knew what you were doing, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Thank you. I didn't show all of the bad parts because nobody wants to really hear about the bad parts, but there really weren't a lot of them. I didn't ever have a pity party. I never was like, oh, why me? Oh, poor me. This is so unfair. I never felt anything like that. I did on occasion have what I call them blue days, where I would kind of let my imagination run away with me and I would see myself like so skinny and dying and then in the coffin and wondering about, like, not that I would be in a coffin because I probably wouldn't be, but anyway, like that was just my vision. Wondering, like, how would it affect people without me here? Specifically, Soph, obviously, but my mom, my sister, my friends. So I did have a few moments of that. Steroids made me grouchy. I told my doctor I'm not taking them. And she was like, don't take them. And I was like, great. She also cut down because they for my chemo, is very, very strong. And they gave me part of the protocol, I guess, is steroids ahead of time to help you from getting sick. And she cut down the steroids on that as much as she could. She actually wanted to go to zero, but the pharmacist wouldn't allow that because they were like, no, she'll get sick. So I was lucky that I had somebody listen to me, but I did get grouchy. With those steroids, ugh, they made me want to claw my skin off. It was not good. But other than that, I mean, I don't know if you've ever read the thing that I wrote, but after my surgery, after my lumpectomy, and I had taken a pink boa, and they were pushing me out in the wheelchair, and I'd forgotten my pink boa in the car, and I was like, oh, wait, you got to re-push me out. And the nurse is like, what? And I'm like, I got to have the boa. So I got the boa. I'm really, really sure that the nurse was rolling her eyes at me. So I put my boa on. My friend was there with me. My family was in the car. And evidently I said, look, if it's not fun, I'm not doing it. And that is kind of the way that I looked at it. And I will say, I had so much support. Every single chemo treatment, somebody else would take me. A different friend would come forward and take me and sit with me. And every single one, I was never afraid of chemo. I embraced it. I was like, heck yeah, bring me the chemo. I'm staying alive. Looking at all the people in there, some of them you knew weren't going to make it, you know, it could have been a sad situation. But I was like, heck, look how far we've come. Look at this, what all we have to do to help people. So I was always very thankful when I got into the infusion area. And every single time when they bring it to me to start infusing me, I would ask the nurse and whoever was with me to pray. And so whoever was there, like maybe it was me, maybe it was one of them, it didn't really matter, but we would pray on the chemo. And I think that maybe that helped. because I was like thankful. I was thankful for it.
Living with gratitude. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what I'm hearing also is a consciousness around all of this, that it wasn't that you were a conscious participant in your healing story, whether it was, I'm going to look for the fun, I'm going to be consciously grateful, I am going to welcome the support of others and invite them into this journey with me. Diana, you've shared that you were a part of this story, and all of you were, that you were sharing openly and freely. And I have to believe that part, a big chunk of your healing story is this openness and this connection and this consciousness around it. I don't want to put words in your mouth. That's what I'm hearing from what you're sharing.
I think it was very conscious on my part, like the steps that I took. It was not an accident. I didn't go into it accidentally, willy-nilly, like, oh, what's going to happen? I didn't do a lot of research into chemo or anything, because I was like, I don't really need to know all that business. You know, I just knew that I was going to go bald and that I might have some stomach issues and that I'd probably get tired.
Mm-hmm.
I never had stomach issues. I did go bald and I got tired, but not like tired. I still rode my horse. I walked a few times, but I did sleep. You know, I take naps in the afternoon and I am not a napper. So that was a big difference.
Okay. So you just said a little something that I want you to talk more about. You said you rode your horse, and I didn't know that you had a horse or a horse. So I'm thinking there's got to be some animal connection here that was probably part of your healing journey as well. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes.
I'm looking at the expression on your face right now, and I'm feeling all of it.
I'm probably going to cry. I loved my horse. I call him my equine soulmate. Mm. His name was Coda. When I got him, he was a horse that not many people wanted or anybody had really wanted at that point. I bought him from a woman who we knew who sells horses, and we were taking classes and stuff and like doing different trail rides and stuff. Oh, I'm going to cry. So I rode him and I knew instantly that he was my guy, and I bought him, and she was like, you don't want this horse. And I was like, oh yes, I do. And people would make fun of him. Like, you bought that horse? I'm like, yeah, I love this horse. And I promised him that I would never put him in a situation that would make him scared. And he never offered to buck me off or anything. And he was not like super well trained. He had a lot of fear. I'll say he had a lot of fear. And I don't know. I just loved him so much. And so during that time, I would still go out and feed him and stuff. And this one particular day, I remember my mom came over and I rode Coda. And I was pretty tired. So when I got off, I just sat on the little mounting block, and he was standing next to me in a like pasture of, excuse me, I'm getting all choked up, a pasture of green grass. And, you know, horses like to graze, right? He did not graze. He stood like a statue next to me. And every few minutes, he would turn his head to the left and look down at me and just wait. And I know that he was just like loving me and helping me heal that horse. I mean, it sounds kind of dorky, but like, really, he changed my life. And I know I changed his. And yes, there was definitely an animal healing session going on with him. He definitely, even just feeding him, even if I wasn't riding, and I had other horses too, but, and I love them, don't get me wrong, but Coda was my guy. And just the way he would look at me, he was just so gentle with me during that time in particular. Like, he knew, and I'm sure he did know, like he could probably smell the chemo in me. And he just took care of me. He took care of my heart.
God, that's beautiful. And people are listening right now and they can't see, but what happened as soon as you started talking about Coda, your little friend with the striped tail was coming into the picture and wanting to be sure you're okay and share some love with you too, which is just, gosh, yeah. I love that.
And that's my daughter's cat, and she's really not that friendly, but she's being very friendly right now. So yes, you know, huh?
That's beautiful.
Because I think we've talked a little bit too about just, you know, energy and, you know, Reiki and that sort of thing. And there's so much energy and healing in animals. I mean, just what they bring and their groundedness and their connection to nature that as humans, I think we forget about, that we let go at some point. And so when, even if you're not outside in the pasture, but if you could connect with those animals, and I know, I mean, I've seen lots of posts with your horse, beautiful Coda, and just being able to even touch Coda probably is, would give you a sense of healing, especially.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, horses are definitely here to help and guide us. They're very all animals are wonderful. And I think all animals have the capacity, but there's something especially strong with the connection between a human and their horse.
Yeah. So much. In the work I do, and I have several students who do their internships at equine assisted therapy places, you know, and so whether it's for physical health, for mental health, just the benefits of riding a horse, of brushing a horse are much research. Yeah. Wonderful.
And there's some, you know, research that their heart rate will bring yours down, you know, like they literally can calm you.
Yeah.
And, you know, they always say, don't show fear. The horse can tell. But I mean, the horse can tell. They intuitively pick it up. They're just very, very intuitive, knowing animals. And I'm so thankful that I had Coda.
Yeah. Even the stride, like when I first thought, oh, wait, why are you going on a horse if you're, you know, weak, if you're tired, maybe you shouldn't be on the horse. But I could imagine, even I hear about the stride of the horse and the way their hips move and how that kind of relaxes your body and gets you kind of in sync with it, which is, yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah. I guess maybe like rocking, right? Like a,
yeah,
there's something akin.
Yeah.
Soothing.
Yeah. So we've talked about kind of childbirth, parenting. you mentioned the separation from your husband and then going through breast cancer and then fighting it and beating it. And I also know that your husband passed away, as did Sophie's dad.
Yes.
Two huge losses, two wonderful men in your life. And you showed up for everybody around you. You have showed up for your daughter at all times, giving her hope also. And I know that she's had her own struggles. So as a parent, as a partner that has dealt with some pretty heavy blows, pretty serious blows, I wonder if you can even talk about how you, I'm not going to say you found hope. It didn't just pop up on you, but how did you continue to see that the sky is blue during these really heavy times?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, with Sophie's dad, Danny, he actually helped me with that unknowingly because he was so completely himself. He wasn't afraid. He was just more of himself than I had ever seen him be through the years. He would just talk to us. He was just, I don't know. It was a very beautiful death. And I remember talking to one of my friends and saying, I've never in my life wanted something to end as much as I want this to, and to never end as much as I want this to. Because it was so beautiful, but so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And I mean, if I can put myself back in that time and just feel like the overwhelming pre-grief, I guess you would call it, like knowing he was going to go. And then like from week to week or day to day, however often we would be seeing him, the changes, the physical changes in his body. But even with that, he was still just so wholly himself. And I grabbed onto that. And I just was so thankful, because I think if he had been afraid or crying, it would have been a lot harder on everyone else. I can only speak for myself. What I did was hold onto that so that I could remind people, specifically Sophie, but I also, he has other children. I held his memory and I hold it so strongly so that I can remind them of who he was, how he loved them. I feel like I never answered the question. I'm just like, blah, 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 blah. But
No, you're answering gorgeously. And thank you. Kate. Okay. Going.
Thank you. But specifically, once again, it was a conscious choice on my part to feel the real, real sadness of the moment and to appreciate the beauty of it. And it's like you said earlier, Don, I think it's like, it's the duality of life. Like, you can have the most magnificent situation and there are horrible things going on. Like, there's no if I don't even know what I'm saying, but both can exist and both do exist. And it's the duality of life. And so for me, again, like being hopeful during that time, like, I mean, I knew he was going to die. There was no two ways about it. But hope in like the love that was created. And I will hand it to Chris, my husband, at that time, like he would drive over to see Danny's like an hour and a half and just to play checkers with him. And so that gave me hope too. Like all the love, it was just like, it was really, really beautiful. And I hope that the kids can see that one day. I'm not sure that they see it quite yet. It's been a while now that he died, but that was their dad and they were very young. So, but I promise you children, Sophie, and all of you others, I have him in my heart and I will share him with you whenever you want.
That's beautiful.
It is. And it moves me so deeply. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. And I know that others right now are being so moved and touched as they hear that. It's, for those of us, and most of us, right, have experienced the journey of death and we've lost someone of import to us. The thing we don't often talk about is the profound beauty and grace and love that exists. We talk, of course, of birth and as people come into this world and how beautiful and profound and all of that, but death can and does resonate in similarly and yes. And heartbreaking also, but just profoundly beautiful as well. It's an incredible thing.
I agree.
Thank you for sharing that story. It's just I'm feeling all of it.
Me too. I'm crying over here. Thanks, Danny. He's probably like, oh my God.
When we touched base recently, one of the things you shared is kind of this new path. You know, I mentioned you did social work. You shared you worked at the DA's office. You've done the furniture refinishing. You've done real estate. And now you're kind of looking into exploring the death doula experience.
Yes.
Makes sense. See the sadness, you see the beauty, you see the hope all at one time. So just share a little bit about that.
Well, so when I was working on my master's degree, I told you this, I got my master's in counseling psychology and I specifically wanted to work with in the hospice arena. I created an internship at Project Transitions in Austin where I did like individual therapy with families. And then I would just go and see the guys, I will call them guys because that it was a hospice for people with AIDS and they were mostly men, one woman that I remember. And I was like, oh, if ever a thing I was born to do, it was to be with these people. Like I loved it. And I think it came from my childhood being with my grandparents in Haskell because I mean, Lord knows, they'd take me to funerals all the time. I was never afraid of death. Like, I would go and, like, look at the bodies and stuff. And I'd go after church with Smitty. We'd go to the nursing home. And I love a nursing home. I love the smell of it. I love the, like, these people are all obviously nearing the end of their lives. I love that feeling. So I knew, like, this is what I'm supposed to do until I got out of school and realized, no, I had the wrong degree. So I didn't get to do that at that time. And that's okay, because I have had such a great career working with people, with the most beautiful people at the hardest times of their lives. And I wouldn't trade that for all the tears I've shed, for all the things I've probably yelled at the sky. But I wouldn't change that for a minute. Now I'm not doing that anymore. Yeah, I love real estate. I love getting people into their homes. Like, that's, it's really cool. It's not easy, but it's a lot easier than, like, sharing your heart with somebody when their family member's dying. You know, like, it's a different kind of hard. But at any rate, I just was like, dang, man, I got to do something. So I looked into becoming a death doula. So I'm going to start in January, and I'm very excited about that. I recently applied for a job at a hospice. I don't know if I'll get it or not, but it's just a part-time job being, like, a bereavement counselor, which, y'all, send me some good vibes, because that would be really great.
Yeah.
And then my goal is to work as a death doula, which I guess people prefer the name end of life doula, because everybody's afraid of death, right? But to work with them, but then I was like, but that's not the end. And so now I'm trying to make it bigger to include life coaching, but I know how to bridge it, like, if I'm with a person, but I don't know how I'll bridge it as a business. But it's not going to stop. I don't want it to stop with a death. Like, I want to continue to work with the families and help them step back into joy, because, like, we keep talking about it, like, it's the duality, the dichotomy of, like, the hard and the beautiful, the sad and the gratefulness. And so that is what I plan on doing next year. And I'm really excited.
I can fully see it coming to be. I mean, that's definitely coming from the fire inside of you. And I believe those sort of inspirations, like, they're meant to move forward. And so I for sure see you doing that work, and how great to have you doing that work.
Yeah. Thank you. Yep, yep. Oh, goodness. So I didn't know you when you were little. We've had, you know, chats about when we were younger, I know, but I'm curious what you, little teenager Leah, 13 years old, would say if she was looking at you today. Like, what would she think? What would she say to you?
I think she would be like, man, oh, I'm going to cry again. I think that she would think I'm pretty cool. I think she would be like, do I get to become like this? Like, is this where I'm going? Is this where we're heading? And I think she would be like, all right, it's going to be okay.
That's mm-hmm. awesome. No doubt. No doubt.
Oh, that might make me cry here.
Ooh, I love that. All right. So in this beautiful world, who really inspires you? Who brings hope to you? Who do you turn to? I guess those are all different questions. Who inspires okay. you?
Because I'll be answering like a million questions as I go. Okay, I'm not going to talk. Well, my daughter inspires me because she has really had a pretty rough life and is coming through it, and she's okay. She's going to be okay. And I know there are beautiful things ahead of her, but yeah. There were many, many times when she did not feel the hope.
Yeah.
So that's inspiring to me because she is coming through it, and yay, yay for that. And I'm going to talk. I've known so many people, like I've said, like, I have another woman who's very close to me. Her daughter was also murdered the grace and beauty that she has gone through that, and like watching her, it's been a while now since Jennifer was murdered, watching her evolution and how she kind of transmuted her grief into working with women who are in domestic violence situations, mm-hmm. and to watch her, like, I won't say become whole, because there's always going to be a piece of her heart missing, but for kind of to grow around that, very inspiring. So I'm just going to keep it brief. I am inspired by people. I am inspired by the underdog. I am inspired by homeless people on the street who are out there asking for money. I really am. Like, I try to give them money all the time. I have another crazy story, which we probably don't have time to get into, about a situation with a homeless man. And it was just like mind-blowing insanity. Yeah, I'm inspired by the underdog. I'm inspired by people who are like, this sucks and I'm going to keep trying.
Yeah.
And a real inspiration in Our Lady of Guadalupe, which is super random. I'm not Catholic, but I don't know. I have a real relationship with her and she inspires me. And I ask her all the time, help me.
So beautiful. Gosh, I wish we had like 3 hours, because I want to hear all of these. Right? These are all good. And I'm hoping that, Leah, you and I can continue to have conversations. I know you have.
Yes, ma'am.
We're friends now too, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, we got to get a group chat going.
100%. Oh my goodness. The stories to share. Okay. I loved your response to that, about that inspiration and the underdog. And, so many of us, that's some magic we need to hear, is just looking at people differently and seeing, wow, that is some incredible human strength to come at certain of life experiences and say, you know what, I'm going to strive for more. I am going to survive. I'm going to find a way. Woo, yes. Woo, that's good stuff. Okay, my friend, do you have sort of like a mantra or a life philosophy, a motto, a go-to phrase that really works for you?
Well, I do actually have a mantra, because I just recently, in the past over a month, started doing Kundalini yoga.
Yeah.
So an actual mantra, Sat Nam, that I do, and it means I am truth, or the truth is here. So that is something that, I believe I actually got it tattooed above my Our Lady of Guadalupe tattoo. Y'all think I'm crazy. Like, no, I really love her.
We don't think you're crazy at all. Yes, and more.
But I also believe, a long time ago, my stepmother gave me this little plaque thing, and it says, and you might have seen it, Diana, because I've had it. I had it in the office. If the eyes had no tears, the soul would have no rainbow.
Girl. Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah, that is. I mean, you need, beauty is only beauty because there's pain. I mean, that's why something is so beautiful. So yeah. So Leah, I know you love music.
I do. And
think of, you know how people have, like, they're walking to stage, they're going on to their TED Talk, they're walking out to, you know, the Oprah show, and their song plays, they have their walk-in song. What is your walk-in song?
Oh my God. Okay. Well, I have two of them, but that's hilarious, because the Spotify Wrapped came out today, and I have like my hype song, and it happened to be my number one song for this year. And I'm so excited. Like, I'm crying again because I'm so excited about it. And y'all are going to be like, what? But it's Juice by Lizzo.
Nice. Yes, nice song.
Excellent. It works.
It just makes me laugh. It makes me so happy. She's so sassy. And I'm like, yeah. And part of it is like, if I'm shining, everybody's going to shine. And that's literally my prayer every day, that like, yeah, I can be the brightest, like, light from, not like ego, but like light from above, so that other people can see their best. And I'm like, yeah, Lizzo, you know. So
that's the whole Lizzo vibe also, right?
Yeah. Except for when she started telling people they were fat. But anyway.
Yeah.
Come on. Everybody, again, duality. So that's my like funny one, but probably my one that I live by most would be Let It Be.
Love it.
That's good words to live by. All right. So along this journey and all of its many turns and all the stories along the way, there comes a point for all of us when we move on from this plane. And as you do, how would you hope, what's the legacy that you hope to have left behind, or how would you hope to be remembered?
I would like to be remembered as somebody who embraced life, lived with joy, and loved to laugh.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say that I already think of you of all of those things. So that's definitely.
Thank you.
And it's definitely how you've entered into my heart. So I see that already.
Love it. Yeah. So I know we're getting close to the hour mark here. I want to switch us to our little, what we call rapid fire. And realizing it's not always rapid fire, our thought was, it's like, okay, let's go. It doesn't have to be a one word answer, but we'll just, the first thing that comes to your mind, I guess. Okay. So what color is hope?
Yellow.
What does hope sound like?
Birds. Bird song.
Sure. So fill in the blank. Joy is?
Huh, that wasn't so easy. Joy is allowing yourself. Joy is accepting yourself, accepting others, and allowing yourself to love that, both yourself and others, the best that you can. I think that doesn't really cover it, but yeah, like joy is love. Like joy is love and life and laughter and all of the beauty and the ugly, everything crammed together, and you mix it up like a little bitty recipe and you cook it and out comes joy.
Yeah. My goodness. Yes. That's gorgeous. All right. So empathy is?
Heart. Mm.
Yeah. Okay. The meaning of life is?
Laughter.
And hope is?
Love.
It all goes together. Yeah. Joy, hope, love. It's all.
Yeah. I can't separate them. Like, that's just part of it. And I'm crying again. Y'all got me over here in my feels.
Well, it only means that you've been very open and real with us. And that's everything, right? That is also part of this journey, is that openness and that willingness to share with others, to be real and open with them. Like, there's no other way to live this life, you know? And this is the out picturing of that is this joy, is this connection. I mean, that's how you get there. Thank you so much for making this so real for us, for all of us.
You're welcome. I told Diane, I'm like, nothing's off limits. Like, I'm going to try and come as authentically and as real. And I hope I did that. So thank you for having me.
I mean, that's what living is, right? I mean, if you're not living authentically, are you living?
Yeah. Like, don't half butt it, you know, like full butt.
You can say it. You can say it. Full butt it. Yeah. Full butt life.
I need a bumper sticker. I live a full butted life.
That's so good.
Usually then we ask, you know, if there's anything going on, if like you want people to find you. I know you're a realtor. I don't know if you want to share that information, if people want to find you on the real estate scene. I know down the road, you're going to finish your doula end of life training. And we can definitely share that information once you have that ready to share. But do you want to share any information if people wanted to find you?
Yeah, I think the easiest way would probably be my Instagram. And it's just Leah T. Sells Texas, spelled out.
Leah T. Sells Texas. Yes, she does.
I mean, go big, girl. Go big.
Oh, no, I love me some Texas.
All right.
Well, I just love, Leah, that you were willing to come on and chat with us and just kind of share your story and the message of hope that you share, as I said, again and again and again, with me, but also just to be able to share it with my sister and with everybody.
I'm so excited.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know we're going to stay in touch and I'm going to keep watching this journey. And I think, you know, so much of what I'm doing and what you're doing, I think that it's just going to kind of keep over
We're gonna be having conversations, all three of us.
Yes,
because there's a lot more to be said here.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah. Love and light and blessings to you. Thank you so much for sharing this time with us. Oh my goodness. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Bye, y'all. Mwah.
Thanks for joining us today on Soul Sisteries.
And thanks for sharing stories with us. We'd love to hear your stories as well and keep the conversation going, absolutely keeping the hope going. So we're really hopeful that you'll connect with our guests as well who have great stories to share. Go ahead and follow them in various social media platforms or live venues, wherever it is that they're performing and sharing what they do.
We would love to have you follow us on all of our social media platforms, subscribe and rate, as that will help us get our message of hope out to others.
Thanks for listening to Soul Sisteries.